Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
Yes, get ready for Soul Plus every Saturday at 10 a.m. Soul Plus, the music that led to soul, came out of soul. Soul Plus, every Saturday, 10 a.m. Get ready. Soul Plus, every Saturday, 10 a.m.
This is Sheffield Live.
Good morning, welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning from 11 until 12. It's Saturday the 21st of December 2024, so technically this is our Christmas edition. All good stuff. We will be here next Saturday the 28th as well, so note that in your diary. And we do the Soul Plus programme the hour before from 10 till 11. Great soul music in all its different forms, so join us for that as well over Christmas. Why not? You've got Julian Paul live in the studio as usual. We'll be speaking to our PG later in the show. Guess what he's doing to end the year almost? It's Bits and Pieces, his favourite topic. This week, and indeed every third Saturday of the month, our guest speaker is Gareth Morgan, who's a member of and ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society. We'll be talking about some great Christmas gift ideas, but we'll also be talking about the Sheffield Photographic Society Open Photography Competition. I think that might be a first for their club. All exciting stuff. Of course, you can follow them on Facebook as well, and they're on Instagram now too. Very active on there. Next Saturday, indeed, and every fourth Saturday of the month, we'll have Chris Dale on the line, all being well, talking about ultra-processed foods, possibly about tooth decay in young children and indeed adults as well. All good stuff. Before we go any further, I saw this in the press. I thought it was very interesting. At the end of November, the world's first wooden satellite was launched into orbit on a SpaceX rocket from Florida. LignoSat has been developed at Kyoto University in Japan to test whether timber can reduce space junk. Its wooden panels will burn up on re-entering the atmosphere. This should cause less pollution than the aluminium oxide particles emitted by conventional satellites, which impede telecommunications and cause all sorts of other issues. So I thought it was a very interesting one. Next up, because it is indeed Saturday the 21st of December, what could that mean? It's the winter solstice in the UK, or indeed in the Northern Hemisphere. So what's all that about then?
Well, in a nutshell, at 9:21, the Earth will be tilted the furthest away from the sun in the Northern Hemisphere. When tilted away days or shorter, winter solstice is when the North Pole is tilted the furthest from the sun. And the summer solstice is the opposite.
Yeah, so in over in New Zealand, where I've got some family friends, they'll be going through their summer solstice just as we're going through the winter solstice. All exciting stuff. Next up, we've got this week's environment update, all sorts going on in that. So according to a report by the World Wide Fund for Nature, a vampire hedgehog, a rock-dwelling dragon, a viper with eyelash-style scales and a bright orange crocodile newt that can survive at 2,300 metres above sea level are amongst 234 new species discovered by scientists in the greater Mekong region of Southeast Asia.
China has completely encircled the country's largest desert with trees in order to stop the sands encroaching on nearby towns and villages. The Taklamakan Desert in the northwest Xinjiang region is...
Well done, Paul!
Xinjiang, I don't know. Xinjiang region is now surrounded by 1,864 miles of new trees, which the government also hopes will act as natural windbreaks to stop dust storms choking cities as far away as Beijing.
All interesting. This is an interesting one, as we have got Gareth Morgan on, who's a member of Sheffield Photographic Society, later in the show. The Nikon Comedy Wildlife Photography Awards have published their winning images for 2024 after receiving a record-breaking 9,000 entries. A shot of a red squirrel diving into a tree was the overall winner, with ruffled eagles, a dancing praying mantis and smooching owlets winning in their individual categories.
Next, cleaner, greener transport. Global sales of electric and hybrid vehicles rose from the seventh consecutive month in November with 1.8 million units sold, according to a report from EV analyst Rio Motion. That's RHO Motion. China accounted for almost 70% of those sales, with the US and Canada also reporting increases from the previous month. In total, 15.2 million EVs have been sold globally this year, a 25% jump from 2023.
Interesting. And with zero emission technologies such as hydrogen electric powered planes still decades away from commercial reality, the aviation industry needs innovations to deliver on decarbonisation targets. So Airbus has high hopes that its new Albatross wing design will now help it to achieve the next big reduction in carbon emissions.
Yes, Manchester.
Most interesting, this one.
330 new yellow buses, many of them electric, will appear on the streets of Manchester on 05 January 2025 as part of Mayor Andy Burnham's long-held ambition to bring buses in the city back into public ownership.
Coming soon to a city near you, perhaps. I think the South Yorkshire Combined Authority Mayor has got similar ideas. I think they're also talking maybe nationally about getting trains back into public ownership. Anyway, all interesting. Finally, this is also an incredibly interesting story. Last week, the price of Arabica coffee beans hit a near 50-year high, and the cheaper Robusta coffee prices also rocketed, all because of extreme weather that hit coffee-growing countries such as Vietnam and Brazil, where drought has been a huge problem. This is not just a blip, because the cost of coffee has been rising over the past few years as severe weather takes its toll. And there's not much relief either for tea drinkers as flooding and drought hit the key tea growing regions such as China, India, Rwanda and Kenya, with quality teas especially becoming more difficult and expensive to grow. So the cost of chocolate has been rising with more frequent heat waves, droughts and heavy rainfalls in West Africa, where the majority of global cocoa is grown. As a result, chocolate has become more expensive, or else manufacturers have shrunk the size of chocolate on sale to keep prices in check. Cocoa trees are particularly sensitive to weather and need very specific conditions to grow, which means that drought and intense heat will continue to make cocoa vulnerable to climate change. Orange juice prices have also increased in recent years because of extreme weather in Florida and Brazil, the biggest orange producer in the world. And in the Mediterranean, the price of olive oil has risen steeply with sharp declines in production, falling by about one-third over the past 4 years due to droughts and intense heat waves. In China, July was the hottest month since comprehensive records began in 1961, and the country faced 25 large-scale floods this year, cutting rice harvests. And in India, All rice exports were banned this year, apart from basmati rice, after farmers faced delayed monsoon rains that created huge crop losses. These are only a few examples of an unmistakable trend as the climate changes, many crops are suffering and food prices are rising. Very interesting track there from Magazine, yes, about the weather, because we're talking about climate change and its impact on the things we eat and drink. Tea, coffee, chocolate, orange juice, rice. Oh, my word. If you just tuned in, of course, you're listening to Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, on digital at Evian South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms. Every week, Christmas and New Year, don't stop us. If you listen on Catch Up, it's the 21st of December, and we should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
Morning. Yes, sounding well, Paul.
Yeah, can just about clear my throat.
So excellent.
Not
so
too bad.
No, indeed. So it's the Christmas edition of our Life Science Show. My word.
Absolutely, and I thought I'd start us off with something deeply scientific: how dinosaur dung reveals the secrets of how they came to rule the world.
Oh,
a great article by Ewan O'Byrne Mulligan in the Eye paper, and it's a culmination of a 10-year study into the underestimated fossils of dinosaur poo, and it's revealed how they came to rule the world. So looking at the stuff that was collected from the poo basin, there were hundreds of coprolites, and they were sent out to researchers in Sweden, Norway, Poland and Hungary, and they used an advanced synchrotron imaging similar to an X-ray to look at the contents inside the fossilized excrement. So what they found were remnants of fish, insects, larger animals and plants, some of which were unusually well preserved and were detected in the samples, allowing scientists to build up a comprehensive picture of life at a crucial time for dinosaurs. So over 30 million years at the end of the Triassic period, into the beginning of the Jurassic, where dinosaurs evolved from small insect-eating creatures into the massive herbivores and hunters that we often see pictured. So over a decade, the project got bigger and bigger and looked in more and more stages. So they find that in the first stage of 230 million years ago, the initial precursors to dinosaurs came about, and they were quite small, feeding on whatever they could find, and these were then followed by the first insect and fish-eating theropods, similar in appearance to T-Rex and small omnivorous dinosaurs. Stage three was 210 million years ago, and saw the emergence of the first large theropods, along with bird-like dinosaurs known as ornithischians. And the next stage, the medium-sized to large herbivorous dinosaurs appeared, like Diplodocus. And in the fifth and final stage, 200 million years ago, theropods rapidly evolved and developed into enormous sizes as dinosaurs entered the period of dominance over their environment that would last for 150 million years until their extinction. So amazing what science can do with a few samples of poo, eh?
Indeed. Well, on that note, Paul, we went to Creswell Crags a few months ago.
Oh,
and
yeah.
that's a fascinating site, well worth a visit. Great cafe as well, I have to say. But it is a really unique site. But they've done a lot of research to do with hyenas, because they were found there, and they can tell what they've eaten from the poo, funnily enough.
Yes, and some recent research has shown that early man ate one another. So, even in the UK. So, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's enough to put you off your Christmas dinner, Paul, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, I thought I'd actually try and end this year on something a bit more positive.
Oh, something happy.
So we've looked at all the scares, but science is developing a super spud to help make sure that we tackle food threat. So taxpayers are assisting in funding projects that will help to protect our Christmas dinner staples from climate change and other threats. UK Research and Innovation, science funding body, has been backing work they say that will help to ensure our Christmas meal. So for the Trimmings, Beehive Innovations in Lincoln have been developing a super spud, editing the genes of improved potato varieties that are healthier and bruise resistant, and enabling them to be cooked faster, reducing energy needed. Also, the humble Brussels sprout.
Yes.
Increasingly, extreme weather has been threatening the supply of them, but we're told by the John Innes Centre in Norwich that they're working to reduce the vulnerability of the UK's supply chain of brassicas crops, which include sprouts, broccoli, cabbage and kale, from fluctuations in the climate. So they also include the National Alternative Protein Innovation Centre in Leeds, the Cellular Agricultural Manufacturing Hub in Bath, an Imperial College-led UKRI, Engineering, Biology and Microbiobial.
Blimey. That's a mouthful, Paul.
I'm hungry.
Yeah, it was a good one. But a positive note, I thought, that one. So, and a bit more good news from Kew, who've named 170 new plants and fungi that Well, they weren't aware of them, but they're already at risk of extinction.
Oh, gosh.
So, a bit of good and bad, but from toadstools to marzipan-scented vines, scientists of the Royal Botanical Gardens at Kew have now named more than 170 new plants and fungi in 2024. So, we're rediscovering things that have been lost, and it's a great sort of move forward. So I think also a bit of not so good news, I guess, that grey squirrels in California have been found to have become carnivores. Oh. So they're seen...
well, they're desperate creatures over here, Paul, so they'll eat anything, won't they?
Chew anything.
They've been spotted eating voles, is the news from California. So, I guess on the positive front again, we had another power record beaten by wind turbines. The UK wind power generation accounted for something like 68.3% of the country's electricity last Wednesday.
Yes, yes. Excellent.
So, good stuff, and it's the development that's happening sort of on a wire. I think Renewable Energy Chief Dan McGrail was saying that setting another clean electricity generation record shows the pivotal role that wind is playing in keeping the country powered up during the festive season. And there was me thinking it was just the sprout.
I know, but you know what? There's another side to that, Paul, isn't there? Because the country's been battered by strong winds, and that's not a good thing. So, well, you know, it's like a double-edged sword, isn't it? Oh, great, it's been really windy. Not for the people who have been battered and lost all their electricity and...
Yeah,
you know, it's a strange one, isn't it? It's climate change, maybe.
Well, I think we've sort of banged on about it for a long time on the show. The climate change is happening. I think that you can look at the science and you look at the people who are naysayers that it's not happening, and you can look at the evidence of change. And I think a lot of it is people studying in depth things like the weather cycles to see truly if we can sort of plot what the changes are. But I think there are lots of things now going into things like biofuels. So there's a huge plant up in Scotland that reprocesses all the stuff from fish and chip shops, fryers, restaurants, all the oils they take up there. Take out the scrap and rubbish and foods content from it and reprocess it into biodiesel.
Yeah.
I think they were saying they're powering something like 7,000 buses in the UK on their biodiesel. And it's massively sort of more efficient than producing it from petrochemicals. So... So a lot of science working away in good areas. So a bit of good news again from another article that I think was Ella Pickover. And she says that a bottle of wine a week combined with a Mediterranean diet could be as good as statins for your heart health. And academics have suggested it. So
depends how big the bottle of wine is, Paul. Some might say.
Well, I think it's some of the old sayings are quite good. You know, a little bit of what you fancy does you good. Too much of it can lead to disaster.
Indeed, so, but you know, going back to climate change and everything, I did see an interesting article this week. Environment Agency starting to predict flood areas, flood resilience, really about around the country. It's saying. There's a lot more places at risk now, particularly coastal areas in the UK. I mean, they're still doing the studying, and even they're not sure because the climate's changing so rapidly. They haven't got the predictive tools that are clever enough. You know, it foxes us, even the weather forecasters, as to what we're going to get and when we're going to get it.
I think there's one of those things where people sort of play the odds. If you look in a lot of countries where they've got a high differential on the tides rising, they still build their houses on stilts.
Yeah.
So you got that. I think in the Netherlands, we've talked about it before, they have floating houses. So basically they make a big concrete boat and build a house in it so that if the water levels change, it can rise and fall with the tides. And again, if we're talking about energy generation, there's still a big push for looking at tidal power, which obviously is in combination with the wind as well. But that's another sort of constant source of power that is being put forward. But it tends to be a bit of a bigger system. So it's got to have a bit more long-term planning, I think, to implement it. And I think that a lot of things that are happening in the world, I think there's a report in the last couple of weeks of a lady in Scotland who's having an anti-cancer jab. She's got esophageal cancer, and there's a new treatment being developed, which is, again, part of a scientific sort of study into how we can attack the cancer cells at early stages. It pretty much the way that we attacked COVID virus and other things by looking at the DNA. There have been massive strides in understanding the DNA and what we can actually use that knowledge for, targeting particular problems and illnesses. So I think it's probably our last show of the year, and I think it's probably a good
chance. We're in next week, Paul. I don't know about you. I know we've got Chris. We have got Chris as our guest speaker next week, and we'll certainly be doing it. Whether you want to put your feet up, Paul, that's fine.
let me say the last one before Christmas.
That's better.
The way I'd like to sort of put things today is, there is a positive way forward, there's a positive future that we can get there, and science has to be one of the things that can help get us there. So really, it's a good chance to wish everybody who's listening a Merry Christmas, and hopefully then we'll talk to you before you get into the Happy New Year. But a bit of peace on earth and goodwill to all, I think, is appropriate for this time of year.
Indeed it is. We're going to play out. We said we're going to play out bits and pieces. We're not. We've gone for, because we've talked about the weather and climate and flooding and things. Well, how about Hold Back the Rain by Duran Duran?
Oh.
Interesting. Eh? Bye-bye, yeah. Paul.
Thank
we'll
you, Paul.
Speak to you Monday. Glory Days Rock Show, 1-3. Hurrah.
Look forward to it.
Bye-bye, bye-bye. Paul.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
People tell me I haven't changed at all, but
Ooh, nice bit of Duran Duran there, live track, I think. Hold yes. Back the Rain, because we were talking to RPG about all sorts of things, but climate change as well and flooding risk. You're, of course, listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday. It is Saturday, the 21st of December, 2024, in case you're listening on Catch Up. So this is technically our pre-Christmas edition, isn't it? And we should have Gareth Morgan on the line. Good morning, Gareth.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. Sounding loud and clear. Thank you for joining us at this rather busy time of year. Coming up to Christmas. Yes. For people who don't know, Gareth, you are a member of and also ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society. And as far as I can see on social media, you've been very active as a club.
We've started to pick it up a little bit, I think it's fair to say. So you'll see a lot more of us at the moment.
Great. So today you're going to talk a little bit about, you've got an open photography competition that people are starting to submit entries to. We might talk a little bit about the Nikon Comedy Wildlife Photography Competition, because that's had a record number of entries this year, 9,000.
I know, it's amazing.
Do you think that's because people are taking more photographs because they've got the mobile phones, or just people are more interested in photography?
Well, I think it's, if you look at it, I think it's because of mobile phones, but most of the ones that have done really well have been taken on what I would call a proper camera.
Yeah, digital. You mean a digital SLR, I take it?
Yeah. Sort of, I'm showing my prejudices now. Although having said that, I mean, some of the smartphones now, the quality of the image is unbelievable. Yeah. Compared to what it used to be like, you know. I mean, I use my phone to take pictures all the time now, but not for competition purposes, but usually for setting up and for checking lighting and things like that. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
you know, quite often you get a really good image.
Mm. So, you know, the Nikon run this competition every year, I think, and have you seen some of the photos then?
Yeah. I mean, the Comedy Wildlife has been going for a long time, and Nikon has certainly been the sponsor for quite a few years now. It's actually on the Sheffield Photographic Facebook page. I put a link up on there.
Yes, so I thought I saw that, yes.
All the members can get to see it, because, I mean, they are some ridiculous. It's just one of those things where it's that split second in time where you're taking a picture of an animal that you think is going to be quite normal, and they do something crazy or stupid or whatever. You know, I think the winning picture is a red squirrel jumping back into its hole in a tree, and all you can see is these 2 feet sticking out of the tree. And it looks ridiculous. But you get some really weird things. It's quite funny, really.
But clearly, whoever's taken those photographs, they've probably taken a lot of photographs to get that one moment in time.
Yes, and I think that it's the classic definition of that moment in time thing, because it is very rarely the photograph that you intended to take, because I don't think people set out to take a funny picture of an animal. If you're going to take a picture, it's usually quite serious, unless it's a pet that's, you know, you're playing around with. Although most of them these days are not pets. It used to be, it was all dogs doing daft things, but now it's a whole range of animals, you know, from, well, in the wild, domestic, pets, all sorts of things.
Yeah, brilliant. I know. You'll have got another photography competition coming up. Will that be next year when you actually exhibit things?
Yes. It's the annual sort of competitive exhibition in the cathedral, which I think is April this year.
It might be the end of March, but it's
April one. Funnily enough, we'll be doing, so straight after Christmas, we'll start collecting, because it's a print competition. So we start getting the prints in, and then in February we get an external judge who comes and wades through however many prints we've got. And then we put an exhibition together in the cathedral, which is great. And the big difference this year is that we've opened it up to the Sheffield public in the widest sense of the word.
To
put their pictures in. So we're asking people to send us a digital image And then we'll pick the best four, and we'll get them printed up, and we'll have them in the exhibition as well.
Wow. So that I was talking to you off air. I was wondering if that's a first for your club, and you said it is in the modern times, yeah. If you like. Yeah.
Yeah, the club, I mean, the thing about Sheffield is it's been going since 1864.
Yes.
Back in the day, I think they regularly ran open competitions. But certainly, since I've even known about the club, this is the first time we've tried it. And just to see if people are interested. It was sparked really by the other exhibitions we've done earlier in the year, where we got lots of people asking. Usually they come and talk about the photographs that are up, but they were more generally asking questions about photography and talking about their own photographs and stuff. So wow. We thought, well, let's give them a chance to
put
their money where their mouth is.
Yeah,
like,
because the exhibition, the perspective exhibition that was running in the Winter Gardens, as it does every year, yeah. There's such a wide range of topics. One is animals, you know, going back to this Nikon Comedy Wildlife, but there's all sorts of themes, isn't there? But the one you're having in April, that will be a competitive one. But again, the range of photographs that your club members choose to put up is quite broad.
It is. I mean, the subject is quite, you know, it's up to whoever wants to. I have to admit, we do have to limit the number of nature images slightly.
Oh.
Because the club is, I think, as I've said before, you know, there's a lot of nature wildlife photographers in Sheffield, and having access to, you know, the Peak District, Yorkshire Wildlife Park and all that sort of stuff, we get lots of really good animal pictures. So you have to make sure you don't have an... when you do an exhibition, you want a range of stuff.
Yeah, you want a mix.
Know, if it was just, I don't know, birds, you know, some people would love that. But I think for the general viewing public, it's better to have a range of stuff.
A range of different things. I know your specialty is people photography. So you've got in your branch of your photographic society, you've got that. Bit of a niche area, but what I've seen of the images that have been sent into that open competition, it's quite broad, isn't it? There's ones of the Crucible Theatre lit up, and you know, some interesting stuff.
We've had a good few landscapes, some wildlife. I think we've only had one portrait so far, which surprised me a bit. So there's still plenty of chance, because I think it runs until, oh god, I've forgotten the date now, but certainly well into next month. And if you look on the Sheffield Photographic Facebook site, there's a link on there. And also, I'm going to post later in the week, I'll put another advert up.
So I think there's
all
one
the details will be there.
Yeah, I think there's one on Insta. There may be one on Instagram as well, because
there
I know your Instagram account is more active now. Yeah. All good stuff now. It is the actual broad advert says it's Sheffield residents. I think up to 17 years old and 18 plus.
We were trying to encourage young photographers, so
18 under and
yeah, 18 and under and
19
over
plus.
18,
yeah. Over 18. Sort of. But
and it's aimed at people who have an association with Sheffield. I know we said on Facebook cover that Sheffield residents, but really anybody who lives or works in Sheffield or the environment will be happy to take those. We just didn't want to do like a national salon.
Oh yeah, you'd be
yeah, you'd get too much,
you'd
to
be swamped
with,
you know. You could regret doing this, whoever's having to go through them and log them, and you know, how will you choose the four winning ones then?
I think we're gonna have this year's president, last year's president, and next year's president do it. So you get three different views.
Wow.
And because they like different types of photography, you know, you don't get a guy who specializes in nature looking at landscapes and saying, oh, no, I don't like that. So I think that's the current plan anyway.
Excellent. So remind me, who is your current president then?
It's a chap called Marcus Offinger,
right,
who is an architect by trade, but a very good photographer in his own right.
And who will be the new president and when?
It'll be October.
So quite a while away then.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not sure we've formally announced it yet.
We don't want to cause any controversy
It's not me. That's
presume you can only be president once, I guess.
No, you can I think a few people have done it more than once, but I think I was fairly recent, so I don't think I've been doing
it. I think
it
you were just before lockdown.
I was the lockdown president.
Well, yeah.
So we had to abandon the season because of lockdown, and then went into Zoom. So I did all of that.
But to be fair, like a lot of clubs, actually, it's been a double edged sword because you probably got more followers from being more online.
Yeah, and we still do Zoom.
Yeah,
for people who,
so it works, doesn't it?
Yeah,
brilliant. And I was going to say, you're going to talk about Christmas gift ideas. I thought a great one for somebody, if you know, a family member's interested in photography, is a membership of your Sheffield Photographic Society.
Well, funnily enough, that's on my list of things to mention, because if you wait till the new year, you get a half price membership.
Wow.
So there's a special offer for you. So again, have a look on the, well, you can look on the website as well, but I mean, we've still got from January to May, lots of guest speakers, some competitions, some exhibitions, some members presentations. So still worth joining for the second half of the year.
Yeah. And I always think it's interesting to give maybe a gift that's makes you do something or learn something or broaden your horizons, maybe.
I mean, we're kind of getting into what I was going to talk about, but perhaps the other way around to what I was going to say, because I actually think there's kind of two kinds of photographers out there. I'm going to be rude to one half, but there's the people who do it for the photography, and then there's the people who do it because they like cameras. And the second half, you find a lot of people, it's like male jewelry, really. They have expensive cameras and, you know, they buy the latest this, that and the other. But they don't use them properly, and they don't, you know, all the gear, no idea.
It's image. It is image, isn't
and
it?
And then you get the other people, which I think is what Sheffield is like, which is the people who are interested in the photograph. So the camera is a tool to achieve what you want to do. And I'm like that. I run my cameras into the ground. I only buy a new one when I absolutely have to.
Oh, I bet your wife begs to differ on that.
She does. I mean, I've got a lot of cameras, but she does accept that I use them a lot. So, you know, it's fair enough. But I actually think, and I've, from my point of view, for the last few Christmases, I much prefer to get a voucher for a photographic experience than another bit of kit. So, I mean, over the last 3 years since COVID, I photographed badgers, red squirrels, a Lancaster bomber, steam trains, and I've done a studio workshop, all because people have bought me Christmas presents of vouchers for those sorts of things. So I would always recommend them. And around Sheffield in the north, there's some great things. Going Digital is one company. There's a company called Photography Session Days, Timeline Events. They all do vouchers, which you can use then to do all sorts of things, from reenactments to steam trains to wildlife to, you know. I mean, if you want to spend 6 hours in a hide waiting for a squirrel, it's
great. But you said these reenactment events are perfect, like, you know, Kelham Island, when you have people dressed up in costume because they want to be photographed. So if you want to do people, the reenactment ones are pretty good, aren't they?
And what some of them do, and I've done this, and I've got another one coming up with Timeline, after the public event is gone, the guys stay on and they might do like 2 or 3 hours just for photographers.
Wow.
So you're not in a scrum of people. There may only be 20 people there taking pictures, but you've got the whole run of the place. So so Barrow Hill Roundhouse in Derbyshire, I think, is it in Derbyshire? Ooh. Wherever it is, the old steam train place. It's, you know, there's a session there which, after the museum is closed for the day, you can turn up and there'll be a number of photographers there, but not hundreds. So you get a real chance to, you know, interact with the reenactors, use the steam trains as backdrops. It's really good.
Yeah, brilliant. Great. So you're hoping to get some vouchers again this
year,
then?
I'm certainly expecting to get at least one.
Brilliant. But, yeah. Any other ideas, then?
Well, conscious of time, let's just pick a couple out. So I think the big trend this year is kind of retro cameras.
Yes.
So it's a bit like the LP vinyl thing we talked about in the past. film is making a huge comeback.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, even to the extent that Kodak are kind of back in the game.
Yeah.
Because they've virtually disappeared.
It's unbelievable, I know.
Yeah. And so I think that's an area, and you can get into that quite cheaply. Of course, you've still got the expense of doing the film. So there's Kodak, I think, one worth looking at. My favourite of the new retros is the new Pentax 17, which I've had a chance to play with.
Oh.
And it's absolutely, I mean, I can't quite justify buying it at the moment. But, but it's got all the advantages of, you know, all the developments of SLR, digital SLRs over the past 10 years have been ploughed back into that camera.
Wow.
But it's a film camera. So it does, you know, all the stuff you're used to. And it's great. You know, it's good fun. But there's lots of things like that you can do. The other thing you can do, talking about film and prints, of course, you don't even need a camera these days. If you've got a smartphone and you're taking pictures with the smartphone, you want to print them, you can get these little instant printers that are quite cheap. You know, lots of people do them. Fujifilm do them. Polaroid even do them. Polaroid are back in the game, you know, doing instant prints. But you can get that. You can print straight from your phone, Bluetooth connectivity. You get a small print. It's not a huge thing. But the quality is really good. So that's an area worth looking at. And final one I mentioned, if you've got kids particularly, is the DIY stuff. You know, Lego do it. Lego do a do-it-yourself, a build camera.
Oh, wow.
Which is a working camera. You know, when you build it, you can actually use it. But, and it's okay. It's quite good. But if you look at the Design Museum, their website, they've got something called the Constructor F, which is an amazing-looking, proper camera, which you assemble yourself, you put it together. Obviously, it's a film camera. They haven't quite mastered the building a sensor yet. But you end up with a proper film camera with a detachable lens. You can use flash on it. It's got various controls. And it really works. It's a great bit of fun. And it's not that expensive. It's, you know, under 100 quid, I'm sure. So.
Wow. So just going back to, if you are going to go retro, because it is all in vogue and it is almost like a fashion thing. It's almost like wear, having a camera around your neck to say, look, I'm trendy. But if you talk about them being film cameras, how easy is it still to get colour film and black and white film then?
Well, colour film is very easy again now. That's certainly come back into fashion. And I mean, I was just walking, where was I? I was walking down the street the other day and walked past a Max Spielman shop. Now, I hadn't seen a Max Spielman shop for years. I don't know if you remember Max
Spielman. I do, yes.
You know, and they're like the high street film developers. And they're selling film. Jessup sell film. Boots, I think, are back in selling film again. So, you know, they're fairly readily available. Black and white, not so much. I don't think I've seen so much black and white film. But it is out there. You need a more specialist lab to develop black and white.
Yeah, yeah.
But Harrison's will do it.
Of course,
Sheffield,
that's London Road. Yes, yeah, still going. Yeah. I know, amazing. Yeah. But you know, roughly how much does film cost then to buy now?
It's for a small... I'm trying to think what I paid for the last one. I mean, you're talking a tenner.
Oh, is that... you know, we used to have a normal SLR camera and we used to use, particularly black, we used to like black and white, but it was relatively cheap back then and then it all disappeared. You couldn't even buy, you know, nobody wanted film, did they? And I just wondered what the prices were like. So that's actually quite good, but obviously you've got to pay to process.
You've got to pay to have it processed, and that can be,
you
know, 20 quid.
And
depends on.
You don't know what you're going to be processing and whether it's worth it.
Yeah, that's the problem with negatives. But it's, you know, it is fun. It's a fun way of getting into it. And, if, you know, if you don't want to go down that road, start with the Polaroid stuff.
Yeah.
Because Polaroid do it, Agfa do it. All these instant cameras, and you know, particularly this time of the year, if you want to take pictures at parties and all that stuff we used to do with Polaroids, you can do it again.
Isn't it strange how things come around?
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
It is indeed. Brilliant. We'll let you go on that note. I'm sure you've got lots of other things to do, Gareth, like eye up your Kodak Pentax 17 that somebody may well buy you.
I don't think so. I'm hoping.
How much is it out of interest?
It's about 450 quid.
Is that pretty good, though, for what it does?
I think it's reasonable. For, you know, I think it is. You're paying a bit for rarity. But then you get some of the other ones that are out there, you know, that have leather cases and, you know, gold-plated this, that and the other. They can be in the thousands.
But everybody's got the interest, haven't they? You know, for you it's photography, for somebody it might be music or musical instruments. So it's enjoy, but thanks so much
for
all you've done for us this year, Gareth.
Yeah, brilliant.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been fantastic, and we're going to keep going in the new year, I hope.
I hope so.
Yes. Excellent. Have a great Christmas, Gareth. Thank you so much, and happy new year.
Cheers, and
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Once in Royal David City, stood a lonely cattle shed. Where a mother held her baby, you'd do well to remember the things he later said. When you're stuffing yourselves at the Christmas parties, you'll just laugh when I tell you to take a running jump. You're missing the point, I'm sure does not need making. That Christmas spirit is not what you drink. So how can you laugh when your own mother's hungry?
And very interesting song there, Jethro Tull, with Christmas Song. It was the B-side to Living in the Past, Who Knew? And we played that because we're talking to Gareth Morgan, who's a member of and also ex-president of Sheffield Photographic Society, about all things for photography, really. In particular, Christmas gift ideas, some great stuff there, including why not join Sheffield Photographic Society, indeed, or get membership for a family member. And don't forget, they've got their open photography competition open to Sheffield residents or living and work people who live and work in Sheffield. Two categories, 18 and under and 19 plus. Check it out, Facebook and Instagram, all exciting stuff. You're, of course, listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We will be in next Saturday, the 28th, so please tune in. We've got the film show following us today, and they're already in the building. So finally, we're just going to quickly talk about the Royal Horticulture Society, because they are getting greener and they're really trying to get people more, young people as well, more involved in gardening. So e-bikes for gardeners, tractors running on hydro-treated vegetable oil or HVO, and loo that flush with washing up water, among many solutions being introduced to help save energy, water, carbon emissions and money at RHS Gardens. Visitors to all of the RHS 5 gardens might see staff pedalling past on one of 18 electric bikes, specially adapted for garden use, that are replacing diesel-fuelled all-terrain vehicles. They've got a large box on the front so staff can ferry tools and up to 100 kilograms of garden waste around without belching out diesel fumes, says Malcolm Anderson, who's the Royal Horticultural Society Head of Sustainability. A few staff were a bit sceptical at first, but now they race to get one in the morning. Garden tractors, which cannot yet be converted to electric, now run on sustainably sourced hydro treated vegetable oil or HVO rather than red diesel, reducing emissions by up to 90%. The RHS says their hydro treated vegetable oil or HVO comes from waste cooking oil. RPG was talking about that earlier on in the show. Comes from waste cooking oil, your local chip shop, for example, rather than from a purpose-grown crop. We don't want land being used to produce fuel when it could be producing food. Very interesting concept. So the RHS Gardens are planning to shift away from using blue water from the mains or the environment to green water from rainwater harvesting and grey water from hand washing and kitchen sinks. The RHS Garden in Bridgewater near Manchester already uses grey water in the loos, and they're considering how we might use it for irrigation. They've got a PhD student about to start looking into grey water recycling. Elsewhere, across the Royal Horticultural Society gardens, they've got smart meters have been installed to detect and fix leaks that were costing £100,000 a year. And at the RHS Gardens, Wisley and Bridgewater, hundreds of solar panels have been installed on roofs of horticultural buildings. And those at Wisley are producing more energy than the team use as a result, which is fantastic news. And coming soon to RHS Gardens, super fast electric charging points in all gardens, all tools to switch from diesel to electric across all gardens, and all heritage buildings at gardens green retrofitted to make them fit for the future. All great stuff. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.